forgeries are an embarrassing secret in the museum world, and most museums rarely admit to purchasing them. But when the Brooklyn Museum discovered that their late antique Egyptian collection contains several forged works, they put them on display in their new exhibit called Unearthing the Truth, Egypt's Pagan and Coptic Sculptures. The show runs through May 10th, and I'm pleased that it brings Edna R. Russman, the Brooklyn Museum's curator of Egyptian art, to our show today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we should point out that most of the pieces here are the real thing.
There are 34 pieces, and 10 we believe to be complete forgeries.
And when did you discover that they might be forgeries?
Well, I can take no credit for that. Several scholars of Coptic art at the end of the 70s and in the early 80s visited the museum and pointed out the ones with real problems.
What led to their suspicions?
One of them had worked with forgeries in other East Coast collections of late antique material. The other one was starting a doctoral dissertation where she dealt with primarily genuine material, but of course she was very tuned into the bad ones.
Are the stones pretty much the same?
That's part of the problem. The forgeries seem to have been made at the cemeteries where the genuine pieces were being unearthed and shipped to Europe. And presumably they used stones, perhaps architectural stones from the tomb chapels or art that had been so badly damaged it wouldn't have sold.
So carbon dating won't work under those circumstances?
No. And things like testing the paint won't work either because they were using the exact same earth pigments that the ancients used. So it's a problem.
Coming from the same sources, but when it's made more recently, doesn't that show up in carbon dating?
No. Carbon dating doesn't work on stone, and on the pigments, it would not be very useful because, of course, they're mineral too, primarily.
So what leads one to suspect this one rather than that one? Are there certain telltale signs?
I feel very confident that the 10 pieces that I'm exhibiting as a forgery and were pointed out by other people are indeed forgeries. Partly it's a subject matter, things that would not have been shown or not have been shown that way in ancient times. Partly it's because in the two or three cases, they are so clumsy and so foolish that I can't imagine how the museum acquired them in the first place.
So in hindsight, it becomes obvious. You know, once you know that a Van Meegeren is not a Vermeer, you wonder, how could anyone have thought that was a Vermeer?
That's it, exactly. And I would carry that a little farther. There are a lot of art historians who say that a forgery will fool people for a generation or maybe two. After that, the part, the contemporary stuff that gets into it, begins to be very visible to the viewer.
Isn't part, one of the clues, the subject matter, the original art, which is Coptic Christian art, is less religious than the forgeries tend to be?
That's part of it. Actually, a few of our forgeries are pagan in subject matter. So they seem to have been the ones who were first in the cities, which is where these cemeteries were. And then as the Copts became more numerous, the families moved in from the countryside and became officials themselves. But it's true also that the Coptic funerary art was much less vivid, much less figural. A lot of the material that we know of just has a cross and not much else.
When you say pagan, what do you mean? You're not talking about the ancient Egyptian religion, are you?
No, I'm not. The ancient Egyptian religion was just about gone by now, except
What time are we talking about?
We're talking about the 4th century, about 345 to about 645, which is when Egypt was conquered by the Islamic people and religion. Now, I've forgotten your question.
Well, the question was, what kind of pagan religion are we talking about here?
A lot of it is the old Greco-Roman mythology. We have the river god. We've got nymphs. We've got Hercules. The only addition to that, and it's an interesting one, is the ancient Egyptian goddess Isis and her son Horus, who now were transported into the Roman pantheon And so they are indicated by symbols rather than actual imagery.
Now, the Copt religion, Christian religion, is not the same as Christianity that was being practiced in the Roman Empire, is it?
Well, no, not really. During the earlier part of the Roman Empire, in the first centuries of Christianity, there was a lot of fussing between bureaucrats, reed bishops and archbishops. And there were meetings where they would try to solve these differences. And at one point, the Egyptian Christians began to go their own way and to be called Coptic then, as they still are today.
What's the word Coptic come from? Do we know?
It's related to the ancient word for Egypt itself, Egyptus. Not Egyptian is foreign, but it's related to that word. So they were calling themselves Egyptians.
How many Coptic Christians are in Egypt today? I seem to remember reading about a year ago that they were being discriminated against recently.
Yeah, they say it's about 10% of the population. I don't know what that would be.
That's pretty high in a country that's of many millions.
Oh, yes, it is pretty high. And they are a very important group of people. They're not really fights. The fussing that seems to have been going on seems to have been out in the villages, and there seem to have been tiffs between the monks in the monasteries and local villagers who were Islamic, mostly over land, from what I've read.
Why were these sculptures created? They come out of tombs, don't they?
They come out of tombs, with a few exceptions, which come from churches. And we have a few of those, but almost all of the material we have is from tombs.
You said many were crosses, but what else? Would they have been put into a tomb with the body in the same way that the ancient Egyptians would have put valued possessions into one of their tombs?
You know, I wish we knew more. These tombs were so looted by so many generations over hundreds and hundreds of years that we don't even have much architecture. But they seem mostly to have been one or two small stone chambers above ground, and then the burial chamber below ground. And the main funerary architecture, or decoration, certainly in the pagan tombs, was an arch or a relief that was just over the body of the deceased. With Christians, the arches were there, but there were crosses and vegetation. And we don't have any of those. We don't have much Christian material. I think it may have been stopped in Europe on its way into the country.
But we can assume that the style is very similar. In the end, we just have an ancient Egyptian style with a pagan version and a Christian version.
Oh, that's exactly true. And there's every
reason. The same way that a Jewish artist in the Italian Renaissance would have painted like other Italian Renaissance artists, even though he wouldn't have painted Christian themes.
Exactly. And the local artists would do whatever was wanted in the same style. And there are lots and lots of reliefs that just show rows of animals. And we don't know whether they were in a pagan or a Christian tomb.
Are there any depictions of Jesus?
Not that I know of. Not at this time.
Which would be odd in a Christian tradition, wouldn't it?
Well, we do have one fake that supposedly shows the Holy Family, presumably in Egypt, with Mary holding a lumpy little child. I don't know whether that subject, it might have been found in churches, but not in tombs.
And you say that they were also painted. Sculptures tended to be painted throughout the ancient world, weren't
they?
Yes.
And these are all limestone, so they're all white stone, and all of them were painted. Very few have enough of the original paint that you can really tell the coloring. And unfortunately, some of the ancient ones were repainted to make them brighter and gaudier, which is another problem.
And the forgers understood that they should only give little traces of paint?
Most of them did. We do have one that is still mostly painted, and it's probably our best. That one is probably as good artistically as any of the ancient forgeries, but it is not ancient.
Do we know when the forgeries were made?
I'm pretty sure they were made starting during World War II into the 50s, when this material began coming out of Egypt.
You have to wonder how much our knowledge of this period was affected over the years by relying on forgeries.
I think not so much our knowledge because of the forgeries, but because of what has been destroyed. We have lots of writing from this period, and it's all about government and taxes and a few family letters. But we know so little about the life and the way people lived.
And we don't know anything about how the pagans and the Copts coexisted?
Not really. Not really.
Although we can see, as we said earlier, that there were similarities in styles. Obviously, the cultures were fairly similar, except for what they believed in.
Oh, I think they may even have been divided among members of single families. We have one tombstone for a woman named Susanna. That's a Christian name in this period. She must have been Christian.
And what was it written in Greek?
Well, names, you know, it's Greek lettering, yeah. Mm-hmm. Her father's name is a traditional ancient Egyptian name, and there is no cross or Christian symbolism on that tombstone. I think that the man, probably her father, was not a Christian. And so he gave her her name, and that's all she had of her religion on that tombstone.
My guest is Edna R. Russman. She is the curator of Egyptian art at the Brooklyn Museum, one of the great collections of Egyptian art in the world. This show that we are discussing, which runs from now, started February 13th through May 10th, is called Unearthing the Truth, Egypt's Pagan and Coptic Sculptures. The Brooklyn Museum developed this Egyptian collection because it could not afford to compete for Renaissance paintings and the like, and wound up buying them these works when they were less expensive than they are today. Now it's one of the great, most priceless collections in the world.
Well, there were a couple of curators back in the early days who were determined to increase the Egyptian collection.
And when did these antique Egyptian sculptures begin to appear on the art market?
Well, as I said, we have a few that we got before World War II, but it was right after World War II, in the 50s into the 70s, that these pieces came pouring out of Egypt. My own belief is that one or two dealers, probably Swiss dealers, were orchestrating it with colleagues in Egypt, and it just poured out. The few scholars of Coptic art were so enchanted. It never occurred to them that some of them were not good, because they all came out together.
And you say at the time all of these works were thought to be Christian, even the pagan ones.
That was the early idea, yes.
And you say that you found this effort to attribute all of the works to Christians insulting. Why?
Well, if you were not a Christian, I think you might well feel slighted that your own religion, of course, I don't know personally anyone today who worships Hercules or Isis or anyone like that, but I do think people deserve to get their due for what they believed in their own lifetime.
Now, this stuff came pouring out of Egypt, and of course that is now a big issue. I don't know whether these sculptures are a particular problem for the Egyptian government, but we have seen any number of situations where Greece and Italy and Egypt have complained that their national heritage has been looted. Would they have felt that way about these works?
Some of them would. There were always Copts in the Antiquities Service, although not very many. But the thing to remember is this was long before any legal restrictions were placed. We at the museum take 1970 as our cutoff date because that is the date of the UN resolution, although the U.S. didn't sign it until, I don't know, many, many years later. I don't expect Egypt to claim or be very interested in claiming this. I would like it,
because these are not the Elgin marbles.
They're not. I would like it if some of them came and examined the ones we think are forgeries, because I think they've got some in their Coptic museum as well. But I haven't been there for many years, so I won't. But no, now we strictly adhere to the antiquities, Egyptian antiquities regulations.
But we can assume that pretty much everything that's in museum collections these days and in some of the better private collections was originally unearthed by tomb raiders, can't we?
Yes, that's can be a rather broad term. There were people who made a living until very recently stealing from tombs. There were others, there were farmers who would be plowing and would find something. And so there's, you know. So
this has happened everywhere. It happens throughout Mesoamerica, throughout mm-hmm. South America.
Exactly.
By including forged works, do you think that this exhibit represents a shift in the relationship between the museum and the museum goer?
Well, I will say I was very pleased when the museum administration said I should show them all and in a key exhibition space.
Well, the Brooklyn Museum did that, has done that in the past as well, hasn't it? I don't know whether other museums have done it.
In recent times, it has not. There have been a few museums nearby who've shown forgeries, and in fact, I've lent to one of those shows. It was really the Great British Museum exhibition 15 years ago, where they showed fakes from every department in the museum that got this modern movement started. And I think it's a good idea.
Because in the past, people assumed that everything that was in a museum was not only authentic, but was important.
Oh, and we curators, you know, we were perfect. We never made a mistake. I don't know of any that I've made personally, but every museum has forgeries, except maybe contemporary art museums.
There's a controversial group that went around the world looking at Rembrandts and saying, this is authentic, this isn't authentic. I remember when they declared the Polish writer at the Frick Museum to not be by Rembrandt, and I thought, well, whoever that guy was, he was pretty good. That's part of the problem with some of these forgeries. Some of these forges are very good.
Absolutely. I don't know much about. I have read about the Rembrandt problem and trying to track those down. And all of those men had students and family members who were painting as well, which I think may have been true in antiquity too. And as I say, one of our forgeries, I know it's a forgery, but I think it's at least as good as any of the ancient ones.
Still, it is fun to go through an exhibit like this without knowing which is which and trying to determine for yourself as an amateur which is
that.
A forgery and which isn't. Often it's the one that looks too perfect.
You can do that. If you go to the museum website, www.brooklynmuseumalloneword.org, and find this exhibition, you will find how to get to a quiz I've made. Where you can judge 12 pieces and decide whether they're ancient, modern, or half and half reworked.
Now, you said that you suspect that there are forgeries in other parts of the collection.
Oh, yeah.
If we went to the rest of your Egyptian collection, would we find, are you willing to show them as forgeries and non-forgeries?
I would very much like to, because we've got some really spectacular. We've got a royal figure in ivory that's over a foot tall, well, nearly a foot tall, and some very well-made stone sculptures. And there are also some that are really laughable. I'd love to be able to show those.
And you wonder why anybody would have bought them at the time, or were people more gullible then? It came from a reputable dealer or a reputable tomb raider, and you just said, well, what the heck? It's got to be the real thing.
Well, you know, the curators who bought the fake Coptic material had been trained in pharaonic art, and so I wouldn't necessarily expect them to catch problems there. But some of the so-called ancient pieces they bought, the pharaonic material, they should have known better.
None of the mummies, I hope.
Not as far as I know.
You've written that there's a book that goes with this exhibit.
A catalog, yeah.
Well, it's smaller than most catalogs because this is a rather modest exhibit, although a wonderful exhibit. And you wrote the text dealing with the kinds of things we've been discussing?
That's right. And it is the whole collection of this kind of material, whether ancient or modern or reworked.
And we, by the way, we have mounted our own little selection, a slideshow of images from the show on our show page at WNYC.org. So listeners will have an opportunity to see what we're talking about. But the real thing is always the best way, and the Brooklyn Museum is one of the great treasures of New York City. And you want to give the address?
It's on Eastern Parkway, 200 Eastern Parkway, at the top of the hill. The library's at the bottom in Brooklyn.
And a glorious building. One of the not only great Egyptian art, but great African art, and a wonderful European collection, and a very fine American collection. Some of the greatest treasures, paintings that we already know from. I had assumed some of them were in other museums, are right there, Gilbert Stuart's and the like, there in the Brooklyn Museum.
Oh yes.
And my thanks so much to you for being on our show today. I've been speaking with Edna R. Russman, who is the curator of Egyptian art at the Brooklyn Museum, the show Unearthing the Truth, Egypt's Pagan and Coptic Sculpture. Thank you so much.
Thank you.